When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the Beta Rank College Football Statistical Model. This is Brian Conger. We're your Sharp College Football Podcast. Thank you for joining us. We're back. It's been a while. It's been a hot minute, but we broke through the bowls. We decided to look back at the teams in the Pac-12 as we go into the offseason. We want to talk about what they were, right? You can't improve anymore. You don't have any more games to play. You know, where did every Pac-12 team land? What were they? And then maybe kind of take a little bit of a peek and project into the future on some of the teams that we're working through. We'll get to that in a bit. I'm joined by Rob Bowron. And Rob, we are coming off the national title game, which was just inappropriate and disgusting. And I thought kind of like this is to start on a sad note, but I thought it was depressing. Like if you're TCU or any team that like, you know, has good coaching, tries hard, has a couple good players. I just thought the national title game showed you that you cannot win the national championship. And to me, that's okay. Like I actually appreciate college football for what it is, but I was really bummed out because it does highlight how different of a sport I think some teams are playing than others. And yet we're all in the same league together. And that's weird. I don't know. What did you think about Georgia's just complete destruction of TCU and what that means for college football? And what do you think it means for the Pac-12? Because I don't think any of our teams are even close to what we saw out of Georgia.
Yeah. I mean, that's largely, I mean, like it is a very, very like, and it's been this way for a little bit, right? Like,
yeah.
Where the teams at the very top of the sport have created separation between themselves and, you know, the rest of the teams. And it can feel very conference oriented, right? But like, really, like, it's not that like the entirety of the SEC, I mean, now the SEC, some of the schools are better, right? Like, and top to bottom, but like the top of the, like the middle of the Big Ten isn't a lot better than where a lot of the Pac, you know, 12 is most years. The trouble is you get into like, you know, like if you bump into the very, very top schools, right, like you are going to be in trouble, right? And TCU definitely had some luck against Michigan, you know, that helped.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I mean, and to be able to escape with a win there. But Michigan would have also gotten, you know, probably beaten by, like, you know, like 20 or so by Georgia. I mean, this was the Georgia team that showed up and just absolutely shut down Tennessee, you know, this year. And I think truthfully, like, I mean, I think that this is one of the, this Georgia team sort of under the radar, I think this season turned out to be one of the better college football teams we've had, you know, these past couple seasons. And I think, you know, like there was, and maybe we didn't necessarily get a chance to like really get a grasp on it until, you know, like until they really took it to TCU, you know, because they didn't really have anyone this year that like, I mean, other than like tennis, like really Tennessee, that was really within spitting distance of this Georgia team. And they put the clamps down, and I thought Georgia largely shut it down in the second half against, you know, Tennessee. You know, like they weren't, they didn't come out. I mean, this Georgia team finished as like the number 5 overall team in like a decade's worth of Beta Rank data. Like, you know, number 1 is still that LSU team from 2019. Number 2 is actually last year's Georgia squad. This year's Georgia squad was a little bit better, but I mean, just a really, really good Georgia team. They were number 1 on offense in Beta Rank, number 1 on defense in Beta Rank, and number 2 on special teams.
So, oh my God.
Like, this is just not, there, I mean, in this, like you talked about, like this year in particular, like there just wasn't anybody, like, I mean, even if we did, you know, Tennessee finished at number two overall in beta rank. You know, Georgia's considerably better than Tennessee. So I would just like, I would like for a lot of like, but to your point, right? Like realizing how far you are off, right? Like, and even if you're like USC and you're off to the, you know, like the big, you know, the Big Ten, you know, like I think the gap between where USC is right now and where Georgia is enormous. You know, and like if you're Oregon and have, you know, aspirations of getting there, like it's a long build. Like you're talking for Oregon to potentially get to where Georgia currently is, you're looking at, you know, like 4 years probably. I mean, I know people are going to be like, no, that's not for, like, I think it's probably like from today, like a considerable 4 year build, because I'm also, I think if you look across, like, I think one of the things with the pack, you know, the teams in the Pac-12 is I'm not sure they've got the right people at coordinator and the right culture in place yet. Right. Not just recruiting, but like, I'm not sure like top to bottom, like if I looked at every team in the Pac-12 that they all have the right personnel in place, coaching, and then I definitely would agree that they don't have the right personnel in place, you know, on the rosters yet.
Yeah, and to put things into context, looking at Georgia and just how they rated in the model this year compared to the closest Pac-12 team, which is Utah. So you mentioned USC, and I think USC had the highest profile. By the way, USC lost to Tulane. Just throw that out there. I know they didn't show, but like they still lost. Utah. And by the way, BetaRank, you know, weighted the playoff games a lot like normally. And then I think right. You put a cap on how you were weighting any of the bowl games, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was just, you get too much wackiness in bowl games these days. So they still count. They just count for 20% of what the playoff games do.
Yeah. So like Utah was the highest rated team in the Pac-12 at the end of the year after the bowls. And they were top 10. Can you just talk through like the gap between Georgia and so like if you're on sharpcollegefootball.com, like BetaRank has, you know, the rating for Georgia is 3.63. The rating for Utah is 1.77. What does that mean? Because that is a big gap.
It means 20 points.
Oh my God.
Like that's what, if Georgia and Utah met on a neutral field, Georgia would be favored by basically 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, listen, like this, you know, this, they, Georgia opened as a 14-point favorite over TCU. I think if they played again, it would be over 20, you know, like more like 24 or 25. Utah's, I mean, they've got a significant gap, right, between where they sit, like on offense, on defense, on special teams. Like Utah has a, like this year's Utah team has a lot of work to do. I mean, that's where, and like, I mean, I don't think, I mean, and I say this cause like, I mean, if you remember like a couple of years ago, Washington was like under Chris Peterson was doing like the OKG recruiting, right?
Yeah.
And they sort of consistently fell short of like Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio, you know, being one of those top teams, that kind of thing, having enough blue chips on the roster. I don't know that, like, I mean, like coaching can't get you the whole way. Like even really good coaching cannot get you the whole way there. Like Georgia, like teams like Georgia are not, and we've talked about this before, teams like Georgia, just rolling the ball. They're not like recruiting 4 and 5 stars and then just like rolling the football out. Like they develop players. They have excellent coaches and staffs, right? Like
Yeah. You're
not going to get there just by coaching, and you're not going to get there just by recruiting. Like you have to do both. And I think that's where, like, when you look across, like, yeah, like Utah, I think coaching wise, you could maybe talk me into like Utah, you know, I think Utah could be better than we saw it this season. But I think coaching wise, I don't think Utah is ever going to be in the same conversation as Georgia or like Bama. I mean, Nick Saban responded to like his 2 year, like, and missing the playoff with signing like one of his best classes ever, you know?
Yeah. Hey, that's a high bar too for him.
I know. I mean, he responded by like doubling down on recruiting. You know, I mean, I just, like, I'm not sure. I mean, like, Ohio State is going to, like, I think with Jim Knowles is going to get their defense sort of, you know, figured out. Although the offense did take a little bit of a step back this season. And if you're USC, like, you know, you have just a, or like Oregon finished as like the next highest Pac-12 team in beta rank. They've got major problems on the defensive side of the ball and a new offensive coordinator. So, I mean, it's like, you know, like for Oregon to get that, that's what I said, like, I think it's like a multi, like, I mean, Oregon or Washington are probably your best bets within the Pac-12. Like, and I don't mean this is like to denigrate Utah. Like, I think Utah could make the playoff. But I think Utah's probably going to need, like, even the very best Utah teams under Whittingham are probably going to need, like, to catch some turnover luck a la TCU to take down or win a semifinal game. Washington and Oregon are a bit of a different animal. I think that they are going to recruit in a different level, you know, than Utah is. And if they got the coaching staff aligned, I think that, you know, you could talk about them.
Well, I was going to say, we'll see about Washington because, you know, DeBoer didn't bring over like all-star stud recruiters from,
no, he didn't.
You know, especially on the defensive side, he brought his people with him, which, you know, their defense is a mess, but it was his first year. I think the offense is going to be great, but I think overall, like, I just have mentally set expectations for college football, and which is fine. And I do think that ESPN pushes the playoffs so much. And at this point, like, I think my expectations are whoever wins the conference is super great. Like that is where I put my focus on. And if you make the Final Four, awesome. And, right, you know, and I'm going to watch the playoff, but I would have watched the playoff anyway. And it just, right, seems like there's so much more of a focus, and people warned about this earlier and I knew it, but like going into it now where it's just like these teams are in a different league, and maybe, right, there's a team or two that kind of gets there every once in a while, but I'm just not going to expect the Pac-12 to win a national title. And I'm just going to, you know, be excited about what's happening in conference, all the bizarre quirks and personalities and dumb stuff that happens, because that's what's endearing about college football. And then, like, if a team wins the playoff game of the Pac-12, that, I think that is the pinnacle in my mind where the conference is going to be at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the Pac-12 is going to be a significant, I mean, this is like, sounds like all doom and gloom, but I mean, like, they're going to be a significant financial disadvantage going forward. I just think, yeah, like, it's going to be very hard. It's going to be like, even with, like, say, Oregon, where you do have one particular booster who comes to mind who's going to try to make up the financial shortfalls as much as he can, you know, like, the gaps are going to be quite large. And I just think it's going to be difficult for the Pac-12 to really compete. I mean, and like, really, within the time horizon that we're talking about, like, USC is not going to compete for a national title before leaving the Pac-12.
No. They're
way too far off, right? Like, in particular on the defensive side of the ball. But I mean, truthfully, like, I mean, it's funny. Like, so Florida State made a huge jump this season. Like, they really improved. Clemson took a step back, but like, you look at those teams, like, I'm not sure the ACC is going to be competing for national titles. I'm like the Big 12, like TCU got in there and like punched way above their weight this season. Like, I'm not sure the Big 12 is, I mean, like, it's pretty much like, I mean, the teams that will be competing for national titles, like, there's a few more of them in the SEC. Like, you could absolutely take Florida and turn them into an Alabama, right? Like, we've seen that before, right? Like, maybe Josh Heupel, like, I mean, people, I've lived in Tennessee, like, people underestimate that it's tougher to recruit in, like, Tennessee's a bit like Alabama, and it doesn't have like a huge, like, in-state recruiting base, but like the commitment of people within Tennessee football is off the charts, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, you've got, of course, your Georgias, your Alabamas, your LSUs, you know, and then you're going to have Texas and A&M in there and Oklahoma. But then it's going to be what? Like, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, and, like, I would put Penn State, like, a half step behind the rest, right? Like, that's where you're at. Like, I mean, I don't know what to – Like those are the teams that for the most part are going to be competing, like that you could talk yourself into, like that program could do it, like make the leap for a national title. I have a hard time right now seeing Clemson consistently competing for a national title in the next couple seasons, right? And like maybe Mike Norvell gets Florida State. Like Florida State's a program that you could foreseeably maybe do it, but it'd be tough.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not like, it's not all bad. I prefer the dumbness of college football to, you know, oh, is USC going to make the, you know, are they going to win a championship with the same five teams every year? Like, I think that's actually boring. I mean, it's fun to watch football played at the highest level, but right. It feels like you're watching a pro game, and I can do that somewhere else with even better play. You know, like I want the dumb special teams, and I appreciate like the, oh, that was why did you let the clock run down? Like what's going on? I mean, that stuff is more endearing, I think, when it comes to college football, and I'm excited, but like it will still be, it's a different sport and there are different expectations, but I just wanted to flush that out there because hot damn TCU just got destroyed. And like, it really was a red flag, I think, for anybody that had aspirations for their tiny team to really make it, like you're in the NCAA tournament, like that. But this is not the tournament. Like this is a whole different ball of wax, and that's fine.
Well, like the worst thing that could happen to TCU happened, which was like Ohio State played Georgia close.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sure Kirby had like their full attention. <You know>? Surely, like Ohio State, like they should be. Like, I mean, it's not as if like. I mean, Ohio State played really well. I don't want to take anything away from them, but like Georgia should have won by 10 points, right? Like they show up and play their game. That's where the score should probably finish out.
Yeah. That game was awesome, by the way. I mean, like, you know,
both the semifinals were great. Like that's like everybody that turned around this season, like I thought it was really dumb because everybody's like, everybody, you want the playoff to expand, blah, 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 blah. Like, which is a battle that's already been over for a long time. It was over before this year. Like watching people not understand that was painful. But like the semifinals, which have often been the blowouts, were really good this year. We got two really good games. and yes, we got an absolute utter blowout in the final, but like I look at it and I'm like, I would like, and I'll say this, like having now incorporated like the FCS playoff games into like the FCS modeling for Baderite, like I welcome it in a way because like the bowl games are so bad, right? Like as far as like the quality of play and everything goes, like, yeah, I mean, will I watch the bowl games? Yes, I will. Right. But like, they're not in any way like indicative of even like, it, like much of that has happened with that team this season almost anymore. Both with like players opting out, like the amount of coaching turnover we now have that's moved forward because of signing day and the transfer portal, you know, like getting more games that actually frickin' matter again is a good thing for college football, right? I do not need like people are like, what will happen to the Rose Bowl? And I'm like, well, it'll be fine, right? Like, and I do truly appreciate the tradition of the Rose Bowl, but it's also true that, like, you know, like the Rose Bowl this year was like, yes, we did get the Pac-12 champion Utah, but like Penn State's the third best team in the Big Ten, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's not as if it's like as traditional as it was, you know, I just think with the, like, you know, and like you had arguably the two blessed players on each team opt out, you know, of the game. You know, I'm interested in more games that are like that, you know, the teams are bringing in their coaching staff intact. They are bringing in their rosters intact for the playoff games. I'm interested in that.
I'll totally trade what we have now for an expanded playoff with some interesting bowl games. Like, as somebody that runs a bowl pool every year, like I watched probably a quarter of the games this year. I just like, it was a mixture of A, being busy and family and travel and all that stuff. But B, it was also just like, nobody's playing in this game, or, oh, the coach isn't coaching in this game. And like, it's fun, but it's like not even close to what it was, you know, 6, 7, 10 years ago. And like, there are probably people that are listening to this show that are like nodding their heads you know, with enthusiasm. And there are also people that just started watching college football.
Are outraged, right? Like, there are people that are genuinely outraged at the playoff. And, like, I mean, I get it, but, like, honestly, like, the opt-outs for bowls were going to happen eventually anyway, because they are meaningless exhibition games. And as players figured out that, like, they are truly meaningless exhibition games and that, like, their NFL future is directly ahead of them, like, this was inevitable. The playoff didn't cause that, right? But that dilution, you know, the like, and the coaching staff's, like, turnover and things like that, again, not caused by the playoff. This is caused by, like, players now more clearly seeing their financial incentives in front of them, which, again, is a good thing. Like, I don't want to see somebody with an NFL future injured in, like, the frickin' Independence Bowl in Shreveport. Like, that is stupid. That is monumentally stupid for that to happen to that person, right? Like, the quarterback for Ole Miss last season that got, like, horribly injured in that bowl game, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, everybody's, like, applauding him, and I'm like, man, like, I mean, that sucks, right? Like, I don't need to see that, you know? I don't, like, I want, you know, like, these players are not being paid enough for what they're doing still.
I would almost prefer, and this would be terrible for TV, so this is more just as a college football fanatic, I would almost prefer the twos for each team just play so we can get a feel for like what's coming next year. I think that would be super fun, but I also understand the marketing behind that. Like, how many people are going to tune in to watch, like, Tulane's twos play USC's twos? Like, that's pretty crappy.
Well, I mean, and an option for the future with NIL might be that the Bulls are able to, like, compensate players to actually show up and play, which would be great, you know, like, or, I mean, when I say the Bulls, it'll be ESPN, which owns the majority of the Bulls.
But even then, though, don't you think it's like, I forget, it's like the pikemen of in the Middle Ages, they would send the pikemen to go out and they'd be like, and they would, like, all pretend to hit each other with the pikes, and then the war would actually start. Like, I feel as if if you paid players to play in a bowl game, they'll play, but I don't know if they're going to play hard.
I'll take the appearance. It's the Pro Bowl, right? Like, I'm here.
Yeah.
Right. And that's totally fair. I don't blame anyone for, like I said, like, realizing where your bread is going to be buttered and that you have the potential of, like, signing, like, if you got injured, it could cost you an enormous amount of money. And you would, I mean, and people can say, like, oh yeah, like, you can get insurance, blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, to be clear, you do not think, like, oh yeah, like, I could just get in a horrific car accident, I've got insurance, no problem, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's just a bizarre system, and it, you know, like, I'm excited for the evolution of the game. Like, I'm curious to see if other conferences really shift more towards the regional, you know, rivalries and kind of go back to that rather than focus on the playoff. Because, like, frankly, I don't watch ESPN, like, anymore at all, and it's not like out of boycott. I just don't find what they're doing interesting. I think there's better content for college football. It's some of the Pac-12 podcasts. It's the Cover 3 podcasts. Yeah. And, like, I just think that there's better ways of covering it rather than playoff. And
well,
so,
I mean, because they're catering to, like, I mean, like, if you're watching ESPN, like, they're catering to the mass audience, right? And, like, the mass audience is connecting into, like, what's going on. I mean, I'm talking about, like, politics, right? It's a horse race, right? Like, that's an easy thing to cover.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Like, and so, like, yeah, absolutely. Like, that's what's going to get coverage, you know, because, like, they're the median fan that is tuning in, you know, is just, like, it might be might be somebody, like, dropping in to college football, doesn't read a lot, but just wants to watch, you know, is not following online, just wants to watch some football. I mean, I get, like, people complain about that. I'm like, I get it, but, like, who's watching? I mean, if I go to the gym, and they have ESPN on, like, I'm like, who's watching this? Not because, and it's not any different on, like, FS1 or anything like that. Like, those talking head shows are just pointless, right? Like, they're just arguing for the sake of arguing.
Yeah.
It's like Crossfire, but for sports. And, like, I want no part of it, right? Like, I don't care. I don't care what Skip Bayless thinks about college football. I don't care what Skip Bayless thinks about anything.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's possibly the stupidest person on the planet. And that's saying something, you know, like, so, like, on all of that stuff, right? Like, and, you know, if you're listening to us, you're probably, like, in the deep cut committed to college football or the Pac-12. Like, that's where, like, I think the interesting stories are. But I only try to get people interested in, like, even beyond. And, like, I wish more fans would get interested in, like, beyond the wins and losses, like, what happened with the teams, right? Like, those are the really interesting things. Because, like, sometimes, like, something will happen that, like, gets obscured by the win-loss record, right?
Yeah.
You know, and, like, those are, like, I mean, Texas this year was, like, good, like, 85% of the time. And then the other 15% of the time, they did something profoundly stupid that often cost them a game. You know? Like, but the fact that, like, they did that, that, like, Texas took a big step forward this year under the radar, right? And that's interesting for next year. And, like, everybody is going to spend all offseason, anytime, like, someone potentially brings up Texas being improved. And I think a lot of it depends on quarterback, because I don't think Ewers is the guy. But – like, Texas is a team that, like, because they've taken the step forward, particularly on defense, they took a huge step forward this season. Kwiatkowski and what they were doing with Gary Patterson, like, as an advisor, I think really helped. They did a really good job this season on defense. Offensively, they have some room still to improve. But, like, Texas is all of a sudden a team that, like, you could be talking about as, like, oh, they're a really interesting dark horse coming in the next year, potentially.
Yeah, yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with them and just some of the mistakes and some of the teams that emerge out of the mistakes. But, Rob, speaking of mistakes, let's talk about Arizona football. and let's do it right after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. And look, I kid. We're talking.
Oh, no, let's not. I mean, Johnny Manziel is still the defensive coordinator.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Which is holy Moses. So we're going to start a series where we're going to just look back at each Pac-12 team and really get a feel for what they were, like what their strengths were, what their weaknesses were. You know, obviously, as we were looking at the transfer portal, Rob, like, it's going to take a hot minute to really figure out who matters, who doesn't, how they impact teams. And in some instances, you're going to have teams like USC. But, like, here's a good example. It was like USC's defense sucked last year. And it sucked this year, even with all the transfers that they brought in. So I'm curious to see how much these transfers matter. And certainly there's positions that will matter. Can you get an edge rusher that can really blow past people?
Yeah.
Can you get
if you need a two gap defensive tackle, right? But like those guys, I also feel like those guys aren't hitting the portal.
Yeah, yeah, those guys are getting paid for sure. And, you know, obviously quarterback matters. If you can get a wide receiver sometimes. So we'll keep an eye out for that. But I do think, like, in the essence, a lot of these teams are what they are. And and they will change and evolve over time like everything does. But anyway, just taking a look back and looking at the stats and looking at where these teams ended up finishing, let's start with the Arizona Wildcats. So they ended up 5-7 on the year. But like you mentioned, Rob, you know, taking a look under the hood outside of that win-loss column, I think is really important. So they make the move at quarterback. They are able to bring in Jaden Delora. What was this like, you know, as we take a look back from an advanced statistics perspective, what was Arizona? What were they good at? What did they suck at? What, like, you know, when we look forward, what are some of the things that we think they could either build on or they're going to regress at?
It's like the big thing is that with this Arizona team this season is they took a big step forward on offense, and they took a big step forward on special teams. right? So like last season, this Arizona squad, they were at 95 on, like, so this team managed to finish this year at number 65 overall in beta rank, which is a big improvement over 92, yeah. which is where they were last year, right? And it was mostly driven by significant improvement on the offensive side of the football. So they went from sitting at number 95 overall in offense to number 32. Now, 32 is a middle of the road Power 5 offense, but like for like Arizona getting out of like the very, you know, one of the worst Power 5 offenses in college football, and making that improvement is really big. And then the tough thing for them is they actually regressed on defense. So they got worse. That offset some of the improvement. So they were at 88 last year on defense. They fell back to 113. And that hurts. But they, again, like, and here's that, like, they went from 114 on special teams all the way up to 45. Which, again, like, that's a really significant improvement. And what they did really well this season, like, if you're running through the team, is, like, they did a really good job creating big plays.
Yeah.
Like, they stunk a bit at drive efficiency. They were 109 on offensive drive efficiency, but they were number 10 on explosive drives. And I thought they did a really, like, that's, I mean, Fish did a really good job finding ways to put together, like, really big plays out there. And they avoided three and outs and turnovers. Like, I mean, in a lot, like, I mean, now when they did turn the ball over, it often came in bunches, but they were 19 in negative drives. And they were a real pass heavy unit, number 14 in effective pass versus 82 in effective rush.
So I think on the offensive side, so here's a question, right? So they're 109 in drive efficiency, and then, but they're 17 in play efficiency. So what is that? Right, because if you take a look at Arizona's offense, like if you're, and we're looking at sharpcollegefootball.com where you can see all this stuff. So if you take a look at the left side, it's all offense, and it's like 32, yeah. 10, 17, 19, 14, and then you see this 109 on offense.
109, yeah.
So what does that, what does that mean?
So it means that like Arizona, when they're putting up points, it's almost all coming from big plays. Right. And so like there's like offensive drive efficiency is your ability to put together, you know, put together drives to put up points. And those drives are not dependent on big plays. Right. So like your ability to like, I mean, think of like Army football, you know, who's really good at drive efficiency and often stinks at the explosive drives. Like the numbers are often flipped for like service academies.
Yeah.
Why? Service academies are like 5 yards and a cloud of dust, man. Like they're and they will drive down the field without putting up a bunch of big plays. Like, so when Arizona's putting up points, you can explain almost all of Arizona's points with big plays, right? And explosive drives and drive efficiency are the two biggest components of your offensive beta rank score, because these are not all equal, right? Like, now play efficiency, they're at 17. That's outside of explosives, their ability to, like, put up a solid yards per play. It's the least important of the, what I call the core four beta rank metrics of drive efficiency, explosive drives, play efficiency, and negative drives. And then negative drives. Like negative drives is like, don't shoot yourself in the foot. Don't produce three and outs. Don't go backwards. Don't turn the ball over. And Arizona was significantly improved here over where they were last year. I think what's interesting is like how pass heavy they were.
Yes, that was going to say that. Well, like,
right, because like, yeah. If you watched Arizona at times, like, I thought they ran the football pretty effectively. But here's the thing is like, beta rank, offensive effective rush and effective pass are not calculated at the margin. Because I think you end up with weird results when you do that for offenses. You'll end up with like, Navy has the most like efficient passing attack. You know, like, that doesn't tell you anything, right? Like, Navy throws the ball once in a blue moon,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's been set up by the run game. So if you wanted to stop Arizona, like, you need to stop the passing attack, right? Like, the run game was there and it wasn't bad, but they didn't rely on it a lot, relatively speaking.
I was, you know, like, let's set Jaden Delore aside because that is a whole, that is its own subject.
Roller coaster?
Yeah. And if you just take, like, let's remove the quarterback, take a look at the play calling and the players that we had on the team, right? So really good wide receivers. Jacob Cowing ended up being the truth, like coming over from UTEP. McMillan was really solid. Dorian Singer was awesome. Now he's transferring over to USC. But I think when you take a look at some of the other wide receivers they have on the team, like that, I think that the passing offense is interesting, and it was even more so with Singer. What surprised me and I don't know if this is the offensive line or and I would assume it is, rather than the talent at running back was, you know, I remember Hifalade came on the show or I came on their show. I forget which, but we're talking about Michael Wiley and I thought he was fine, but I don't think he was like, and if you take a look at his numbers, right, 6.8 per carry, really solid, 8 touchdowns, only 770 yards. But it's not like Arizona. If you take a look at their numbers at Beta Rank, it almost looks like it's an air raid offense, but it's not. Like, they ran the ball 352 times and threw it about 450. So that split isn't that, but the efficiency was so bad at the running game. Like, what was that? Like, cause this was not a good running team.
So I think part of it is like, again, like when Arizona was putting up yards, they're putting them up through the air, right? Like, for the most part. So like, if you look at Wiley, he didn't get, like, and so the other thing to remember is, like, there's a lot of Delora scrambles in there, too.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, for the effective rush, that's like, true. I make sure and remove sacks and count them towards passing. For Arizona's, like Wiley did well when he ran the football, but he was off, like, they were often set up. By like, it's almost the inverse of Navy. Like, Arizona's run game often thrived because people are like, oh my God, they're going to throw the football. But it wasn't an error. Like, we often talked about, like, Arizona, like in the air raid, like, you have a quick pass game. Like, it often felt like Arizona did not have a quick passing game.
No.
And it was a lot of deep shots. Like, Arizona, and it is an adventure because I actually don't think Delora is super accurate deep. It makes it an adventure, right? Like, it felt like, and I think truthfully, as much as I do not always enjoy the Jaden Delora roller coaster ride, like, the offensive line looked like they improved, partly because like Delora scrambled around like crazy, right? Like, now I think some of this is on Fish and the offensive design. I think Arizona should have had more of a, like, I think Fish was just like, well, Delora, like, the offensive line will be a bit better. And they were. Not a lot, but a bit. And Delora can scramble around. And we should just take a bunch of deep shots and see if we can get away with it. I am not a head coach for many reasons. I would have done something different, which is also incorporated a quick passing game to try to get your receivers the ball more easily. And also to take advantage, like to try to counteract your offensive, some of your offensive line issues, but they didn't do that. So it was like, it often, if you watched Arizona this season, it often felt like Delora's just like scrambling around until somebody gets open. That seemed to be by design.
It was, I don't know if anybody's watched or read Catch 22, but this is the Yosarian, like the way that he flies that airplane of Pac-12 offenses, where it's just up and down and anywhere, like, just don't get shot by the bomb. And, you know, when you take a look at Delora, because I think he's coming back. You know, this is where, if you just read the stats, right? And I got caught on this one with, I think it was Connor Brewer, the guy at Utah, right? You take a look at the stats, you go, okay. Because 3,600 yards, 62.5% completion rate. You know, he's throwing 25 touchdowns and 13 interceptions, but it doesn't tell the full story. Like, if you take a look at the way that those games are played, like, was he a significant upgrade from what Arizona had? Well, yeah, but what Arizona had was a disaster, 2 years ago. So,
yeah.
And I think, like, you know, I don't know if he improves. I didn't really see that much improvement between what he did at Washington State and what he did at Arizona this last year. I think this offense.
I mean, he certainly had better receivers at Arizona.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Which is weird because, right, you know, when you think of Leach's offense, but like a lot of those wide receivers, you know, made their way through the program by the time, you know, he was done there. I think this offense is going to pretty much be the same next year, right? Like, I don't think the offensive line is going to be that much improved. I think you have the same running backs basically, right? DJ Williams is still there. You have Rayshon Luke. I think Wiley's back.
And Wiley was really good in catching the foot. I mean, he had 36 catches.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's like on Wiley, like with Wiley, like they did. I mean, Wiley was dangerous out of the backfield. I think that, like, I mean, look, I mean, like, yes, like with Dorian Singer, who I mean, I think arguably was their most dangerous wide receiver. I mean, Pauling had more catches, but like Singer matched, like outdid him on yards on like 30, like around 20 fewer catches, 19 fewer catches.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and McMillan was a factor, and I think will continue to, you know, like another year at a college weight room and, you know, with some college coaching, I think is going to help them significantly. But yeah, like, I mean, this is largely going to be the same. I mean, look, if you took, I mean, look, as much as I, like, if you took any other passer and maybe put them behind Arizona's offensive line and tried to have them do what Jaden Delora was doing, like, they're going to get sacked a million times. It's going to be really bad. But, like, for, I mean, and truly, Delora feels like a stopgap until they can get the offensive line really fixed, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
And the recruiting's been decent, right? Morgan's coming back. Like, I mean, I actually have to say, like, I thought the offensive line did take a bit of a step forward this season, and I was somewhat impressed by that because, like, they were a disaster the year before. But, I mean, like, we also talk about, too, like, it, like, people, because you don't see what's going on with the receivers, like, the year before, the offensive line often looked terrible because Arizona's wide receivers were awful and never got open, right?
Yeah.
That, like, so that can kill you too as a line. Like, I think they got the, some of it is they got a lot of help, and some of it is I think they did improve. I mean, and Jordan Morgan I think played really well over the majority of the season. So I mean, I think that they're like, I think that they like Delora works fine as a stopgap. I mean, and the question is like, I mean, they got that the 4-star QB that they signed out of Colorado that they really like. And it's either going to be him or Fafita. And I think it's probably, the, you know, the 4-star kid out of Colorado as they wait behind Delora. But, like, Delora, he, like, he was only a sophomore this year, technically. Like, I don't know that Delora is, like, going to be a starter in his senior year at Arizona.
Yeah, I think he might get pushed out. But I think next year, I mean, you're going to, it's going to be the same offense. It's going to be top 35.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're going to throw it. The rushing game will be, you know, like, not that great. But, like, I guess the only question for me is like, I wasn't as impressed with their offensive line. I think that what you saw this year is probably the cap, and that's like a C, and that's worrisome to me. Like, I just, after seeing like Mahalchek and a couple other offensive, like Joe Gilbert at Arizona, like I've seen coaches that have made lemonade out of lemons, and like this coach does not. And congratulations, you got Pete Carroll's son.
I mean, I mean, truthfully, like the right tackle, Pate, like, was god awful, right? Like, couldn't handle speed rush any of the years that he was at Arizona. I think some of the guys were pretty young along the line. I mean, they did start true freshmen in there. I think they have a shot to improve, right? Like, I was encouraged by what I saw from the line. Like, we talked about this coming into, like, last year and then this year is, like, they don't have the depth. They don't have the bodies, right? Like, I don't think it's necessarily, like, I don't know that it's fair to judge them yet. I'll say that. Like, I think that there's still like something to be seen there. Now you flip it on the defense. Like, I think it's fair to judge.
Yeah. Let's go through those numbers. Cause whoo, there's a lot of three numbered numbers here. Three digits.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the worst power five. Like, I mean, it's, you really need Colorado whose defense finished at 125 in Beta rank. You know, like, to really leaven out how bad, I mean, like, to like provide a floor that Arizona didn't manage to get under on the defensive side of the football. And I mean, truthfully, like, I'm amazed. There's still some Arizona fans out there that believe that Nansen just needs to get his guys.
Okay.
Right. But they took such a big step back defensively, you know, falling down to 113, drive efficiency at 111. I mean, you could put together long drives to put up points. They were 112 on explosive drives. You could put up big plays. Play efficiency at 108. They struggled there. The one number that, like, and this is a really bad number for a Power 5 unit, but comparatively, 87 and negative drives, forcing three and outs and turn, like, like, midway through the season, Johnny Nansen figured out that blitzing was legal. All of a sudden, like, they started blitzing a lot more. But you could just tell. I mean, you could just tell. Like, I don't know what Fish is thinking here. Like, I think Fish it ends up putting a cap on the rebuild as long as Nansen is your defensive play caller there. They finished at 115 in effective rush. I mean, Arizona really struggled to stop the run this season, and it always amazed me when teams would like not figure that out. But they also weren't that great against the pass, number 93 in effective pass, and they lose arguably their three most important, like three of their most important players. Three of their most important defensive players, like at either rushing the passer or coverage. And in particular, like Christian Roland Wallace, and Ty and Barr's going out to USC. Parrish Shand, I mean, I'd be surprised. He might be one of those guys that like is transferring to LSU but didn't land a scholarship.
Yeah.
But like Barr's and Christian Roland Wallace are more than likely to have gotten scholarships to USC. That really hurts to see them, move off like that for this Arizona team. And like, I know people are going to be like, oh, we landed Justin Flo and this Georgia defensive line with honestly never played. some guys that like once upon a time when they were recruited were 4 stars or 5 stars, like, I really struggle to see it on this defensive side of the football. And we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast. Like, I'm of the inclination, and I'm going to have to see how this, get a little more data in, and see, but right now on the face of it, it certainly looks as if, it's easier to rebuild through the portal on offense than it is on defense.
Well, the other player that was really important, and I know he got injured, he had some injury problems at the end of the season, but it was Hunter Echols. He was really good for Arizona. And if you want to look on the sunny side, Hunter Echols he saw the field. I don't want to be unfair, but he was always in the background of that USC defense. And I know that because we've been covering this conference forever, and we do the rosters every year. And I'm like, oh yeah, Hunter Echols. So he gets put on the edge for Arizona. He's immediately a force. And now you get, I know Justin Flo was not somebody that I know that there was a lot of hype when he came in, right? 5-star player was that, but he did not look like a 5-star player at Oregon. He was fine. But he's certainly, when you think of 5-star players, you think of people that are immediate impact. They're out in 2 years, and that's not him. He's not that player. Is it possible
did he transfer to Arizona?
Yeah, that's
a good point. I mean, that sounds harsh, but if Justin Flo was this this huge massive talent, there's no way Arizona went out and outbid, a bunch of schools that desperately wanted Justin Flo. I just don't buy it.
And you can more rosy picture, right? There have been a number of players that have come to Arizona on defense that, the New Mexico State kid,
Roy Lopez was awesome.
Yeah. But saw him play, right? We haven't seen this. We haven't seen this Georgia player, on the field basically. And
yeah, he wasn't even on the 2 deep. He was not even on the 2 deep. The only time he really saw playing time was on special teams.
So on paper, if you're looking at this defense, right, you lose your best cornerback. Yes. You lose your best pass rushers. You lose your best guy up in the middle. And and Arizona was 113. I just don't see a scenario where they get past. I think they regress. But let's say they take a step forward. They don't have the bodies, personnel, recruiting, transfer guys in to get past 90 and
the play calling is awful.
Yes.
Nobody had. I mean, look, you're going to, regardless of what anyone thinks about, Don Brown's last year at Michigan, where it clearly did not work out, Don Brown still knows how to call a defense. And I think we saw that last year, where Arizona's defense was, much better than the personnel, And they took a big step back this season, under Nansen, with largely, this is the part where people are like, oh, he just doesn't have a personnel. Don Brown coached pretty much the same defense, right? pretty much the same dudes, right? It's not like Don Brown had a bunch of like ace defenders that like Johnny Manziel didn't, right?
Yeah.
I look at this and it's just like it is inexplicable to me that fit. Like, I mean, we talked about this when he made the move. It was like, what? And now to still be continuing to sit on it, even coming into this year, like it just feels it's inexcusable to be like, Arizona's players deserve better. Like you as a boss have to do better for the people that like essentially report into you to like put them in a position to succeed.
I thought possibly he did it. Well, no, I know he did it for recruiting, right? Cause Nancy.
Yeah. I mean, it was all about recruiting,
but and it worked on the offensive side, but Nansen isn't on the offensive side. And the UCLA players that he brought in, I can't recall them seeing the field, right? Like,
right.
Didn't he bring in like a linebacker and a tackle, like a guy in the on the defensive line? And I don't remember them having any impact at all. And
so allegedly he is like the guy that reached out to Delora in the, you know, and helped land him. I mean, I'm not saying like Nansen can't recruit, but like it's not as if Arizona like signed some gangbusters class because Johnny Manziel. You know, I mean, like that's like, I guess it's like my point is like, sure, fine, he's a better recruiter than Don Brown, sure,
yeah,
100%.
But
right?
wasn't Fifita and McMillan? Weren't they part? No, that's UCLA. Yeah.
No, he's like those guys were coming in and he was like, those guys were signed prior to Nansen coming over, really, I think. Yeah. I mean, those guys were like, Nansen didn't. So it's the, the conversation you have to have is like, how good does the recruiting have to be to offset the play calling and schematic failures?
Yeah.
And like, my answer would be like, Nansen, like, Arizona needs to be signing like top 20 classes. You know, maybe top 15 classes to offset this kind of fall off. And he didn't. He's not that good. So I don't know what Fish is doing. Like Arizona with Don Brown back calling plays probably takes a step forward this season defensively instead of back. And Arizona maybe goes to a bowl.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a like it's such a dumb. I mean, the Pac-12 was like full, like, I mean, every conference has this, but like, it's just such a weird, it was such a weird, dumb move, like so out of left field. I mean, this conference like has some weird ones, you know? Like all around, but this is what it just feels like. It just feels because like maybe, I mean, you could talk me into Arizona maybe taking a step forward offensively next year, but not, I'm not saying like much. Like, let's say Arizona, which finished at 32, finishes like as a fringy top 25 offense, right? Like,
yeah,
let's say the special teams, which took an enormous step forward for the first time in like 7 years. Like, Arizona had decent special teams for the first time since like Rich Rod's like third year,
yeah, like Nick Foles,
yeah, right. So, like, let's say special teams, like, maybe improves a bit, too. Like, I don't think I think Arizona could, like, maybe, and people are going to want to go to a bowl next year. Like, Arizona got to the 5 wins this season. You know, like, they're going to try to sell, like, you know, that maybe this is the year Arizona gets through and gets to a bowl game. Like, I think the defense is going to be bad enough that, like, they might miss a bowl.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it, right? Like, so Arizona next year, they're going to have probably a top 25 offense. They're going to be able to throw the ball. They'll run the ball fairly efficiently, but it's not going to be like a huge, you know, you're not going to lose the game because of the running game. I mean, put it that way. And then on the defense, it's going to be awful, 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 awful. Every single aspect, like pass rush, you know, pass defense, rush defense, like it's all going to be bad. And I mean, I think that's what the team is. And if they're able to jump up higher on the offensive side, maybe they win 6 games, maybe they win 7 games, but I don't believe it. Cause I don't think the defense is going to be there. And,
they're going to need some turnover. I mean, to get to a bowl game next year, they probably need turnover luck.
Yeah.
Now the schedule lightens up a little bit as I recall, but it's going to be a tough slog. right? Like, I mean, now I think Arizona, like, I think we're at the coming into the year where like the Pac-12 swaps it up. So I think Arizona gets Stanford back on the schedule, which is a good thing. I mean, like, I'm assuming Stanford's going to have a little bit of a rebuild.
Yeah.
You know, so that's going to help, right? Like, they're, you know, like they played both Oregon and Washington. Like, I don't think they play them both next season. They don't have North Dakota frickin' State on the schedule. They get Northern Arizona next season. You know, like, I mean, now they did beat North Dakota State, but it was a near thing. I'm not saying like they're going to be far off, but like, I think if like you were coming into the season, like Arizona's probably right around like 4 or 5 wins again. And I think you would need the defense to improve for them, or like, you know, really get a sense of like, I don't know who their non-conference is. I know they're not playing North Dakota State.
They got UTEP and they're at Mississippi State. I don't know the third team though.
Okay. That'll be Northern Arizona.
Oh, what?
So they rotate with ASU playing NAU.
I mean, they could get there. It just, if the defense is that bad, it's going to be a slog to get there. Like, it would, rather than, hey, we really have, like, you know, going in, if you're an Arizona fan, oh, we really have a chance to get to a bowl. Like, this, I think this coming year is, oh, man, if everything goes right, we might make, you know, the Gideon Underwear Bowl, or like, you know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
I think that's probably where they're at.
I mean, they do have one staff, but like, I mean, I guess what's interesting is like, I mean, Dwayne Walker is not coming back. They do have one current staff opening. He coached their defensive backs. I mean, like, I guess what's interesting to think about is like, I mean, if you're Jed Fish, and I thought they should have made a move to put somebody else in charge of play calling in the middle of the season. I thought it was that bad. You know, like, who do you have somebody on staff that you could turn to? Like, because I think it's bad enough that Fish had better have like an audible ready to go, right? Like, if this isn't, I mean, if this isn't working, where do you go, right? Then they, yeah, like, I don't think you can, like, I don't think if this continues again until like game 3 or 4 next season, like, they can't keep letting Manson call plays.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they will pull the trigger next year if it's, and hopefully in the middle of the season. So, let's leave it there. So that's Arizona. Next week we will tackle another team. We'll go through, what they were, what they can be in the coming season, but we wanted to do a team that was kind of baked in already, you know, not like the transfer portal will continue churning, but, a lot of that DNA is already written into this team as they move into 2023. Rob, anything else to plug before we get out of here?
No, I mean, like, we're in a little bit of the hiatus. Like, there's no preview videos to do. Like, we have to wait for like the finalized signing classes and then Bill Connolly to roll out his, you know, returning production number. And those usually come in February. So it's just going to be a little bit quiet.
Yeah.
Like, which isn't bad. Like, I got a lot of work to do.
Yeah. 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 It's like almost like enjoy the vacation, but, except we're working. So,
yeah. I still have the day job. Yep.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next week, and, we'll keep an eye on this transfer portal. Take care.